Welcome to the Awaken Podcast. At Awaken Church, we are passionate about wrestling with and being unraveled by the Christian scriptures. Ideally, we do this together around the table in the neighborhood of Bowness. As we see it, Jesus has invited all of us to encounter him in a diverse community and participate with him in a mission of loving our neighbors.
Hi, so my name is Adriana, and I became a member about 2 months ago, I think. And today I'm going to speak about suffering and self-compassion. And yeah, I'm feeling a little bit anxious right now as I start, but I think it's just because I'm really passionate about this, and I just really want to make sure you understand what I'm saying. So I am right now a provisional psychologist, so part of it is going to be like theology, and the other part's going to be a lot of psychology, so it's going to be a bit of a difference, I think. So, yeah. So I'm going to start with Psalm 38. Lord, my longings are sitting in plain sight, my groans an old story to you. My heart's about to break. I am a burned out case. Cataracts blind me to God and good. Old friends avoid me like the plague. My cousins never visit. My neighbors stab me in the back. My competitors blacken my name. Devoutly they pray for my ruin. But I am deaf and mute to it all, ears shut and mouth shut. I don't hear a word they say. Don't speak a word in response. What do I do, God? Is wait for you. Wait for my Lord, my God. You will answer. I wait and pray so they do not laugh me off, won't smugly strut off when I stumble. I'm on the edge of losing it. The pain in my gut keeps burning. I'm ready to tell my story of failure. I'm no longer smug in my sin. My enemies are alive and in action, a lynch mob after my neck. I give out good and get back evil. From God haters who can't stand a God lover. Don't dump me, God. My God, don't stand up. Hurry and help me. I want some wide-eyed open space in my life. So I think many of us can relate to some of the pain and suffering and emotions in this psalm. There's a lot of hurt and rejection and anguish and desperation. And I think many of us can relate to the suffering of many characters in the Bible. I was thinking about it this week, and I think almost every character in the Bible suffers at some point. And so suffering isn't unique. And throughout the Bible, God responds to the suffering of creation with compassion. And compassion is defined as suffering with. It is recognizing pain or suffering of another and joining with them in the suffering and taking actions to alleviate this pain with the hope that eventually they will not be suffering anymore. One author states that compassion is a visible expression of God's solidarity with an intimate regard for the welfare of humanity. So we can see God showing compassion to Adam and Eve when he calls them out of hiding and gives them clothes after they've disobeyed him. God shows compassion to the nation of Israel when he sends Moses and Aaron to get them out of suffering. Jesus demonstrates his compassion over and over again through his teaching and healing and defending. And the ultimate expression of God's compassion towards us is the incarnation, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And this is the beginning and the end of our suffering. This gives us hope that one day we will be with God in a place where there's no more death or mourning, crying, or pain. And unfortunately, this hasn't happened yet. Pain and suffering in life is unavoidable and inevitable. And suffering takes place in many forms in our life, physically, socially, emotionally, spiritually. And I think it's important to note that we don't all experience the same kinds of suffering or the degrees of suffering, but all of us do eventually have some sort of suffering. pain and suffering can be seen as the threads that unite all of humanity together. And I say this not as a downer, but just as kind of a reality. It's just, it is what it is, unfortunately. So, and I think it's normal for humans to resist and avoid and to judge the pain that we feel. We find it distressing to face it, so then we avoid it, and that inevitably makes it worse. When we resist, avoid, or judge our pain, we are fighting against ourselves. So part of us feels pain, and the other part is telling us we shouldn't feel the pain. And when we have that conflict with ourselves, we actually instigate our survival response, which is our fight, flight, or freeze response. And so then our body goes into another state of survival. So we're in pain, and then our judgment about our pain causes that survival response to make it actually worse. So when we have this survivor response, these reactions initiate self-criticism, self-isolation, and self-absorption. So, and there's many good reasons why we do try to resist our pain. Humans are just generally wired to avoid pain and to seek pleasure. It's kind of our automatic reaction to it. Another reason why we resist pain is that we just have, maybe we have a belief that we shouldn't be in pain, that we shouldn't have it, or we feel shame about that. And sometimes we feel pain when we have different emotions, and it's the rules about those emotions that give us more pain. So for example, one rule that I have is that I shouldn't be anxious because I know all the right ways to tackle it, and I know all the right ways around it, and so I shouldn't be feeling that way. So then I'm anxious, but then I feel like I shouldn't be anxious, and that ends up causing me more pain and more anxiety about it. So, and we learn these different rules about pain and emotion from our society, or from our families, or from how people have responded to our emotions in the past. So there's lots of different reasons why this happens. So another example is we shouldn't be angry. Women shouldn't be angry, and men shouldn't be sad, the rule that we have. And so sometimes if, women are angry, they feel a lot of shame, or more pain is added to their anger because they feel like they shouldn't feel it. So then we hide our pain or our difficult emotions because of what we believe about them. Another reason we resist the pain is that because we haven't ever been taught how to regulate or face it. If anger was a really hard emotion for our parents to deal with, for example, and we're angry, our parents might tell us not to be angry because they weren't sure how to handle it themselves. They'll tell you not to experience that, but then you never learn what you're supposed to do with it. So then later on, when you're trying to deal with it, you don't really have the tools, and so then maybe you'll avoid it too. So we do have pain, we experience it, we experience challenging emotions, and often we try to resist it for a lot of different reasons. So I think one really helpful way to help us to encounter our suffering and our challenging emotions is to offer ourselves compassion. And so we can see, if we're looking at God and Jesus, their example is to show us compassion when we're feeling pain. So I think that we can use that template and show ourselves compassion as well. So, yeah. Instead of greeting difficult emotions by fighting hard against them, we can bear witness to our pain and respond with kindness and understanding. Self-compassion helps us move toward and through our pain. Having self-compassion benefits us in many ways. It increases well-being, happiness, life satisfaction, confidence, physical health, and social connectedness. So, yeah, so there's tons of benefits to it. And I think, it can be a really helpful way to be able to turn towards our suffering instead of move away from it. So what is self-compassion? So there's a leading psychologist that researches self-compassion, and her name is Kristen Neft. And she describes self-compassion as having three parts. So mindfulness, common humanity, and kindness. So mindfulness is being aware and accepting the present moment without judgment. Mindfulness in this situation helps us notice our pain and our challenging emotions without judgment. And the first step to any change is being aware of the situation. So mindfulness helps us to be aware. The next aspect of self-compassion is common humanity. So this is the awareness that we all have pain and challenging emotions. None of us chose our families, our cultures, our bodies, our genetics. It's not that this negates our suffering, but it makes it so that it's not minimized or maximized. So if we all experience suffering, it doesn't make us better or worse than anyone else, basically. And I think like that idea helps us know that we're not alone with those struggles, and connects us to each other in a different way. Because sometimes we can feel like we're suffering or we're having challenging emotions and we're the only one. And so then it isolates us. But when we realize like everyone deals with this stuff and has been like since the beginning, I think it can reduce some of that shame that we feel. So the last aspect of self-compassion is kindness. And this is talking and acting towards yourself in a way when you're experiencing pain or challenging emotions that is kind. So one example that's commonly used is trying to imagine a child or someone else you love in the same situation that you're in and thinking about, how would I talk to this person about this experience? If someone you love was in the same situation, how would you talk to them? And then trying to turn that same compassion and love towards yourself. Because often it's easier for us, I think, to extend it to other people than it is to give it to ourselves. So, and being kind to ourselves doesn't always mean that you are letting yourself do whatever you want to. Being kind to ourselves means that we're doing what's best for us. So kindness can also be really fierce, like setting up boundaries with someone or feeling tired and going to bed instead of watching Netflix. So that's like a way of caring for yourself by being fierce and not just giving yourself whatever you want. Yeah, so again, like those three components of self-compassion are mindfulness, common humanity, and kindness. So I think there's a lot of myths about self-compassion that prevent us from doing it. And especially, I think there's some that really are really hard for Christians to kind of overcome. So I think some of them are that maybe we think that self-compassion is selfish and that it minimizes our negative behavior, and that maybe we don't deserve self-compassion. Yeah. So the first myth I'm going to debunk is selfishness. So some people believe that self-compassion is selfish or will lead to us becoming more selfish. However, becoming more self-compassionate allows us to give more to other relationships. In fact, research has shown that self-compassionate people are more caring and supportive in romantic relationships and more likely to compromise in relationship conflicts and more compassionate and forgiving to others. So some of the reasons why this happens is that when we're not able to be empathetic or compassionate to ourselves for feelings like despair, failure, and shame, we really can't accept those feelings in other people. And so if we're able to kind of accept those feelings for ourselves, we can accept them for other people. And another reason why self-compassion isn't selfish is because self-compassion and compassion use the same circuits in our brain. So, and the same kind of hormones and chemicals get released when we're compassionate. So if you're self-compassionate or you're compassionate to other people, you're strengthening that circuit either way. So just in general, you'll gain in the ability to be more compassionate towards yourself and others, regardless of who you're directing the compassion to. Yeah, and some people believe that self-compassion is selfish because they believe that there's like a limited amount of self-compassion. So if you have like 10 self-compassion units and I extend like 8 to myself, then I'll only have 2 to give to other people. But really, it's more like the more you have compassion for yourself, the more your capacity for compassion grows and can be extended to other people. Yeah. So yeah, the second, I think, hindrance to self-compassion, or the myth that we believe about self-compassion, is that it will minimize harmful behavior. And I think sometimes, obviously, we do create suffering for ourselves and others through our actions, because we're not perfect and we make mistakes. And I think sometimes society and Christian culture makes us feel like we need to hold on to our mistakes and beat ourselves up for how we're feeling or what we have done so that we make sure that we don't do it again. We want to feel guilt and shame so that these feelings prevent us from doing or feeling that way again. However, it doesn't really help us to change. So that actually makes us more fearful of failing in the future and reduces our confidence. And it's shaming or believing that we're bad leads to us to hide and leads to isolation, and isolation creates more problems. So beating ourselves up won't motivate us to change or to become better. So having self-compassion in these situations when we feel like we've failed or we've sinned or made a mistake helps give us the safety to admit that we have made a mistake. And research shows that self-compassionate people have a greater responsibility for their actions and are more likely to apologize. So self-compassion can help us to be humble and admit what we've done wrong and can help us repair the situation. So, and I think it's really important to also remember that God extends forgiveness and compassion to everyone over and over again. And we can see this, in Jesus' life when he meets people just where they're at in their suffering and brokenness and sinfulness and offers them forgiveness and compassion. One story that I always love is Jesus just meeting the woman at the well and just sitting with her and hearing her story. And just, accepting her. And I think, if Jesus can give us that compassion and that forgiveness, I think, we can give it to ourselves too. So those are some of the myths maybe that prevent us from having self-compassion, and those were that it was selfish, that it minimizes our mistakes, and that, the last one is that we're not worthy of self-compassion. So this is kind of similar to the second one, but I think that sometimes just based on what we think about ourselves or how other people have treated us in the past, maybe we believe that we're unworthy of being treated with love and compassion. And it's really hard for us to be kind and loving towards ourselves in those situations. And I think sometimes it is hard to remember that, like, God loves us unconditionally and that we're treasured by him and by other people. It's pretty easy for us to forget that, and I think that hinders us from offering self-compassion to ourselves. So I just wanted to kind of read a few verses that I think can remind us about how valuable we are to God and remind us of our worth. So Psalm 139, "For you formed my inward parts, and you knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful all your works, and my soul knows it very well." And Zephaniah 3:17, "The Lord your God is in your midst, and the mighty one who will save. He will rejoice over you with gladness, and he will quiet you by his love, and he'll exult over you with loud singing." Isaiah 43:4, "Because you are precious in my eyes and honored, and I love you, and I gave men in return for you and peoples in exchange for your life." And I think, too, when God created us, or created Adam and Eve, he said that they were good, and they were worthy of his love and attention and relationship, and we are too, no matter what we've done. We are loved by him, and we are deserving of his compassion, even when it's hard for us to accept or remember. Yeah. So I think that one of the best ways to deal with our own suffering is by offering ourselves self-compassion. Like I said, self-compassion allows us to turn towards our pain and find a way to care for ourselves when we feel it. Self-compassion helps us to be more authentic and heal and move towards others and God. So I think if you can put the picture up. Yeah, so I feel like there's so much more to say about this topic, and there's so many different ways to kind of foster more self-compassion. And one practice I find pretty helpful is this acronym called RAIN. So the first part is recognizing what you're experiencing. So noticing your sensations, your thoughts, your emotions, and behaviors, and just being aware of it. So when we recognize and we're able to name our emotions, it helps our brains understand what's happening and helps calm us down. And so, when we name it out loud, it kind of, it helps us to engage our prefrontal cortex of our brain, which is our logical, like, thinking, decision-making part of our brain. And this can take a while to notice, because sometimes I know, like, if I'm feeling anxious, I won't notice right away, but maybe I'll feel like butterflies in my stomach, or I'll feel my shoulders get really tight, and that will be an indication that I'm, like, feeling anxious or suffering. It's important to just notice and become more aware of yourself. And the next part of this acronym is accepting and allowing it. So that's just, you recognize it and you accept it. So, I'm just feeling, so you just notice it and allow it to be without feeling like you need to change it, which can be really hard if you're not used to sitting with whatever you're experiencing. The next letter is investigate, and this is just get curious about what these things are saying or telling to you. And curiosity, I think it's important to approach this like with curiosity instead of judgment, because judgment will feel like you're attacking yourself again, and that will lead to more suffering. But curiosity helps us to explore it and understand it, and kind of become a scientist about our situation instead of a critic. And the next letter is N, and it's nurture. And this is kind of where the kindness piece comes in. So exploring like what you might need to soothe or protect yourself. Do you need to breathe? Do you need to have time by yourself? Do you need to set up a boundary or ask for help? And only you know what's best in these moments. It can be helpful to kind of prepare and think about some ways where you do feel comforted before you're in these situations so that you'll be able to think of them more quickly. And I think in that, like the last step, this is where we can feel more inclined to talk to other people or to pray or just reach out. So I will give an example. So I'll just use anxiety again because that seems fitting for me. So I would recognize I'm feeling anxious because I'm having a harder time focusing or I have butterflies in my stomach. I would name it. I would say I'm feeling anxious. I would just allow it to be there. Try to allow it to be there. And then get curious about it. What is happening? I'm seeing a bunch of people. I really want to do a good job, and I don't know if they're going to get what I'm trying to say. And that's normal, right? Like, most people get anxious if they're talking in front of people. And then nurture. What do I need? Maybe I need to breathe a little bit more and take a few more pauses so that's kind of a handy tool. Maybe it's hard to remember it takes just like anything, developing a new skill or a new way of reacting to something takes time. Be compassionate to yourself while you're trying to be more compassionate to yourself, because it won't be perfect and it'll be hard at first. My big thing is, I think, or my final thing is that I just think that giving ourselves compassion allows us to be kind to ourselves, but then reach out and connect to other people and to connect to God. And I think that's really a huge part of healing and working through painful situations too. Another way to foster self-compassion is through different like imagery and meditations. And so I wanted to end today walking you through a loving kindness meditation. So in this meditation, you're asked to imagine someone that a spiritual teacher or someone that you feel loved by. And sometimes, like, it's easy to for some people to imagine things in their minds, and it's harder for other people to have those images. So just try to think of the feeling or, like, that sensation of compassion or care. It doesn't necessarily have to be a picture. And if you don't feel comfortable doing this, that's okay. It's not going to be for everyone. So I'm going to invite you to close your eyes or gaze downward. Have a soft gaze. Sit comfortably with your feet flat on the floor and your spine straight. Relax your whole body. Without straining or concentrating, just relax and gently follow the instructions. Take a deep breath in and out. Think of a person close to you who loves you very much. It could be someone from the past or the present, someone still in your life or who has passed. It could be a spiritual teacher or a guide. Imagine that person standing on your right side, sending you their love. That person is sending you wishes for safety, for your well-being and happiness. Feel the warm wishes and the love coming from that person towards you. Take a deep breath in and out. Now bring to mind the same person or another person who cherishes you deeply. Imagine that person standing on your left side, sending you wishes for wellness, for your health and happiness. Feel the kindness and warmth coming to you from that person. Take a deep breath in and out. Now imagine that you are surrounded on all sides by all the people who love you and who have loved you. Picture your friends and loved ones surrounding you. They are standing, sending you wishes for happiness, well-being, and health. Bask in the warm wishes and love coming from all sides. You are filled and overflowing with warmth and love. Take a deep breath in and out. And another breath in and out. Notice the state of your mind and how you feel after this exercise. And when you're ready, bring your attention back to the room.